Let's do it.
Yes, yes,
come on.
You guys go ahead. I'm going to grab my blanket and I'll watch you from here.
You're going, honey. Oh.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 561 for the week of May 5th, 2025. I am Symbolic Kiln, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Deluxe Arch, Sarah D. Bunting.
This is going to be so special.
No spring chicken, Tara Ariano.
And my feathers are ruffled.
And Chica Fraser, Allison Lewis.
Is it ethical to sleep with your surf instructor?
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us for the first time, she is my colleague at Cracked. She is my one-time hotel roommate. It's Allison Lewis.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're thrilled to have you here to talk about The Four Seasons, the TV edition, in which three middle-aged couple friends invite the viewer along on vacations that are, guess what, seasonal. We first meet them in the spring when they all gather at a country house owned by Nick, played by Steve Carell, and Anne, Carrie Kenney. Kate, Tina Fey, is concerned that her college friend Danny, Coleman Domingo, is being cavalier about a planned cardiac procedure. Kate's husband Jack, Will Forte, runs interference for her with Danny's exuberant husband Claude, Marco Calvani. But whatever else everyone thought was going to happen that weekend gets derailed when Nick announces to Danny and Jack that he wants to leave Anne, not knowing she has plans of her own. Future episodes set in the subsequent three seasons introduce us to the straight couple's college-aged daughters and others who come into everybody's lives, particularly Nick's. The series was adapted by Tina Fey and her former 30 Rock writers, Lang Fisher and Tracy Wigfield. It was adapted from the 1981 movie of the same name, which Alan Alda wrote, directed, and starred in. All eight episodes of this Four Seasons dropped on Netflix May 1st. We may talk about events from any of them. Let's do the Chen check-in. Allison, should our listeners watch the Four Seasons?
No.
Sarah?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Dave.
I'm going to give this one a pass.
It's a no for me as well. Wow. Let's get into it. I'm thrown. Sarah, what did you like about this show? I'm so shocked.
Keeping in mind that the original film is one of those properties that HBO had the rights to and aired at least twice a day for like a year and a half.
Yeah.
Other properties like this include Just One of the Guys, License to Drive, sure. Like all the Corey films. So I have a very deep familiarity with these properties, even if they're not good by any objective standard. They are now like existing in me at the marrow level.
Sure.
So there's that. I am glad that in the TV series, the death of the Mercedes was not repeated from the movie in the last sequence. Spoiler. This shouldn't have worked for me. There are a lot of things that were annoying about it. It was too long and I don't need a second season like they set up. But I don't know, like for some reason, being able to compare the original to this worked for me. And I like this version of Tina Fey that's a little bit dramatic and serious. It's just okay.
I think we need to do cat announcement.
Cat announcement.
It's a cat.
Yes, I apologize for the foster cat Cookie, who is now climbing all over the office and yelling, having been asleep all day until right now.
Of course.
I apologize. He also enjoyed the Four Seasons and I guess wants to register his yes vote from around the office. Anyway, sorry if you're anti-meowing.
Okay, so Allison, I think you and I agree because when we were briefly talking about this show last week, you called it a waste of a cast. What were you hoping for and where did it fall short for you?
Okay, so in general, I'm really against remakes, reboots, everything of the like. Mm-hmm. I've never seen the film, so this is not part of my DNA. It's not embedded inside of my body in any way.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like another slop show with a cast that didn't need to do this. I think I would have appreciated it more if they were like up-and-coming actors, not established people like Steve Carell, Tina Fey. I don't need to see them do this.
Mm-hmm.
They're just spinning the wheel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel important it didn't really have much to say. It was just, these couples don't talk to each other. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure.
Yeah.
And it's eight episodes of that.
Totally agree, Allison. I felt like this, as is, as I'm watching it, is something 30 Rock Tina Fey might skewer, but something that American Express spokesperson Tina Fey would unironically bring to the table.
Yes.
And I think that's, in a nutshell, why it just doesn't grab me, because that Tina Fey is not a good Tina Fey.
Yeah. I mean, the movie is now streaming on Netflix as we're recording this on the 6th. It just dropped yesterday. So I watched it last night. I had seen it as a kid, but it had been, you know, decades. This is prime. I mean, if you were not in an HBO context, this was prime. You got a VCR for the weekend and your parents rented 10 movies. And this is one of them for people of a certain age. But the movie, I can understand, Sarah, why, you know, you would be more kindly disposed to the show having that deep knowledge of it. And it's funny that, like,
on board. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny that, like, some of the shots are, like, almost seem like they were remade absolutely, like, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, you're saying this is Tina Fey's Watchmen?
Yes, exactly.
Got it.
But I just wanted it to be funnier. Like, with the people that were involved, I was sort of, the muted tone of it really bummed me out, that it was sort of like, we're not being silly anymore. Now we're being serious. Now we're in our 50s and we have to start talking about our colons or
whatever. Put away the guns, get out the walkie-talkies. Here
yes.
comes old creators.
Right. And it may have been because, you know, Tina Fey has worked with Alan Alda. He had a recurring role on 30 Rock, and, like, she might have felt, or they, I mean, all three of them might have felt sort of too reverent of the original. To put their own spin on it.
Or it was marketed as, it's the movie, but it's a comedy from 30 Rock people. And it's like, I don't think that was ever their intent. And, like, I mean, I don't disagree with your review that, like, I mean, it isn't very funny. And if you go in expecting that take on it, but they don't really take that different of an angle emotionally. Also, what's with these, like, prestige half-hour dramedies killing off Steve Carell?
Okay, yeah, he cannot stop dying. He can't stop dying.
Thank you. Why?
It was The Morning Show, right? Mm-hmm. And then what was that show he did on Hulu where he was the psychiatrist?
The Patient.
And yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
What's the deal?
I forgot
he's
he died in that, too.
You guys got to put that in all your reviews on Crack, in the hopes that someone in the marketing team just puts that. He just can't stop dying. Cracked.
Yeah. I mean, he basically died in exactly the same way that he did on The Morning Show.
Oh, like, yeah. Driving.
Driving off the road.
Yeah. And it was just, I actually, that part, I had to rewind to the beginning of the episode because I was like, did I start dozing off? Did I miss a little bit of a transition where it felt like this was going to happen? It's like they just wanted to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
They had to get him out of there. Yeah. And it, you know, it was clumsy, I think.
Yeah.
Sounds like a new TikTok challenge. The Steve Carell death challenge.
Well, I mean, I also wonder if it's like with Dancing with the Stars, where you're like, come on, we'll only have you there for like three episodes. Don't worry about it. This was like Steve Carell only agreed to do it. It was like, I will not be in a season two if there is one.
And yet Space Force.
And yet Space Force. I also felt like either Steve Carell or Marco Calvani should have been ordered to shave their beard because they look too much alike.
Yeah.
You got beard blindness.
I got beard blindness. So the first time I remember seeing Coleman Domingo was when he was playing an extremely cool character in the first season of Fear the Walking Dead, which, like, after he left the show, I stopped watching it, basically. So it's nice to see him back playing someone chill and funny. Allison, what did you think of him?
And stylish, very stylish.
Very.
Oh, my gosh. You know, just a standout. And yeah, I just love looking at him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't matter that I thought his character was an asshole. I did like looking at him, you know, but again, kind of a waste of him. He was, you know, a bright spot, but my God, it didn't need to be made. I'll just say we didn't need it.
It didn't. I enjoyed it. I watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it was not necessary. Like,
right.
You know, both things can be and are true.
Yeah.
There's a scene, I think it's the first episode where, and this, I think, will paint a picture of whether you should watch it or not. I think it was like either you're going to hate it or you'd be like, yeah, that's my jam. That's the kind of light entertainment I'm here for. There's a scene in the pilot where they're all on Steve Carell's character's lake boat.
Yeah.
and they are talking, and the Will Forte character gets embarrassed, and he, like, you know, does a performative jump off the boat because he's so embarrassed about what happened. And then they all, like, do the same in succession with some sort of, like, little bon mot as they jump off, some sort of, like, one-liner about their character and their state of mind at the moment, and they jump off, and then they're all in the water. If that sequence doesn't bug the shit out of you, then you might be able to stick through this all season, as it were, and enjoy it. Like me, or like, oh, good, then no, you are safe. You got the Dave T. Cole stamp of no watch approval. If that, me describing that's like, yuck. So, once again, I've solved all of TV's problems.
Yeah. Thank you. I feel like we're winding up, but I just wanted to ask. The big event of the first episode is obviously Nick telling all his friends he wants to leave his wife and why. How did everyone feel the show wanted us to feel about that decision and his reasons for it? Like, did we think we're supposed to approve and understand, or think he was shitty?
Who's what's the name of the actress who plays his
Carrie
wife
Kenny.
Again? I don't think you hire her if you want a completely sympathetic take on the character. Because that's just
on,
her jam.
On Anne, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, I felt bad for Anne the whole time.
Oh, I'm not saying I didn't. I'm just saying I think the show was trying to steer you in that direction just because that character actor kind of plays those roles a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I think that was the casting choice.
It did feel like it was set up to make her seem annoying.
Yes.
And you know, just like a bump on a log and maybe even a little negative, whiny.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, after that first episode, you know, I was like, well, let's see what Anne has to say. Let's hear from her point of view. You know, again, they could have had like maybe one or two 10 to 15 minute conversations and solved the entire issue. But,
right.
You know, then there wouldn't have been 8 episodes.
Yeah. What did you think, Sarah? Because Anne is definitely way more sidelined in the movie than she is here.
Anne is also unbelievably annoying in the movie. She's played by Sandy Dennis,
yeah,
and she's like
said.
Photographing zucchini, and even her friends are just like, oh my god, I can't. I thought that this was an interesting way into it, but it's also like it had nice moments of like it's later in the series and he's like playing the same game that he's always complaining that she would rather play than spend time whatever fucking him or being adventurous. But also he's supposed to be a hedge fund manager.
Yeah,
why do you cast Steve Carell for that? I don't that did not really work for me. Like there were certain, you're dropped into the middle of these relationships and asked to accept these people as these archetypes, and it wasn't entirely successful. And Cookie has some complaints as well, apparently.
Yeah, I feel like having to plan her ex's funeral is the final indignity for poor Anne, the most hard done by character in the show.
Really a tragic character. Really very tragic. Yeah.
All right, it's time to go around the dial where we talk about what we've been watching on TV recently. Not necessarily new TV, but we'll see what's on tap. Tara, you're first.
Well, if you've been watching the current season of Taskmaster Australia and felt it was very blah, good news, because the original show is back for series 19. This has been highly anticipated because, A, they held back the premiere date for a weirdly long time after having a premiere like live event in New York in January. The show finally did premiere in the UK on May 1st. But also, B, because it was long rumored this season would feature the first American player who was not based in the UK, and that turned out to be true, and it's Jason Mantzoukas. Dave and I watched the whole season, brag. I paid particular attention to Mantzoukas because I was going to interview him, and we'll link that in the show notes as well. He brings his usual maniac persona to the proceedings, I would say. He carries a knife. He's got a lockpicking kit. Both of those make appearances in the first episode. He just seems ready to fuck shit up at all times. At some point, they've told him he can't get on the roof at the Taskmaster house, which has the effect of making him want to try to get on the roof all the time. He's a great player. He's definitely a huge fan of the show and a student of the game. And he brings a very, you know, friendly kind of chaos to it. As for the rest of the cast, Fatia El-Ghori, new to me, never heard of her before. In the first episode, she was coming across to me as the kind of player who doesn't want to try, possibly partly because the live task was very physical and she didn't seem like she was down for it. And I've talked to other people who had the same impression of her after that first episode, which made me wish They'd picked something else for that live task that didn't make her seem like such a stick in the mud, but she grew on me quickly. If that was your original read, give her a chance. Matthew Bainton is known to me from the UK version of Ghosts. He's the poet, the 19th century poet in that. He chose a runner's outfit for his task costume, and that comes into play later in the season, and I won't say more. He's very good at the prize tasks. Stevie Martin, also new to me. To be clear, Stevie Martin, not Steve Martin. I don't think it's a huge spoiler to say she is partnered with Jason for the team tasks. They are a joy together. And then Rosie Ramsey is the wife of Chris Ramsey from season 13, a.k.a. No way, that guy. I don't recall any big moments for her from the season. Sorry, she was fine. In general, the whole cast has really great chemistry in the studio. I feel like every season Greg has a favorite in the cast, but this season it seemed like it kept changing from episode to episode, which was fun. It's a good season. Episodes air Thursdays in the UK, and then they're on YouTube in the US on Fridays. Dave, you also watched this season. Anything to add?
Well, I was going to mention what happened with Matthew, but I guess that happens later. But it was a standout moment.
It was.
All right, Allison, what do you got for us?
Been rewatching the Mary Tyler Moore Show. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of always watching that, if I'm honest with you. I do own it on DVD because it's very serious to me. And they just don't make them like this anymore. It's a classic sitcom, informed how sitcoms should be done. You know, nobody's taking notes from that now. We see that. But just some really stellar characters. Ted Baxter is one of the best characters ever created for television. Yeah. You know, beautiful misogyny, amazing mm-hmm. outfits, you know, quips, one-liners. He's a classic doofus with moments of sincerity. You can't beat it. And, you know, everyone else is great, but Ted Baxter is a standout for me. I think everyone should watch that show for him alone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's so many shows that we talk about that have like a direct line from the Mary Tyler Moore Show to them. You know, like you can see it in Cheers, you can see it in 30 Rock, yes. Shows we talk about a lot and everything around those shows. The thing that struck me, because we actually watched it for the first time.
We just finished a couple months ago.
Yeah, we finished a couple months ago. So it's been like a year, you know, nibbling on it. Just like how it has like half a foot in the past and like the other foot in, you know, yes. modernity, you know, like, and yes. it's really some of the things once in a while you're like, oh, that seems like it's out of place because I think of it more like a 70s show than like a 60s mm-hmm. show. And then like you get, but then like for the rest of it, you're like, oh, like the bones of everything I like are in this show.
Is
like
this, yes.
You know, the archetypes, like everything yes. was perfected here, you know, they groomed mm-hmm. it and it's all like how Absolutely. You like it. You know, it's like the first one of those, how you like it.
Yep.
And yeah. we were watching shows going backwards, sort of like we watched Cheers and then we watched Bob Newhart's show and then we watched Mary Tyler Moore Show. So like when you go back
and,
then we're sort of watching them in reverse chronological order, ending with the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And you can kind of see where so much of what came after like came from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just fantastic. It's also one of my favorite shows that depicts each character's many facets. Mm-hmm. Like you get to know everyone in a different way. And it doesn't come off as like hokey or cheesy or forced. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they're well-rounded characters, but they take their time with fleshing that out. I really love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only time I thought they misstepped with that was the Murray Loves Mary episode. I was like,
there are so many instances where it's like, does Murray even like his wife? Does yeah. he love Murray? Yes. He's always trying to cheat on her. He's always got a wandering eye, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's something that I, you know, but the misogyny for each of those men is potent in different ways. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do like seeing how men do that throughout different decades. It all is a bit the same.
We're always innovating.
Yeah. Exactly.
Always innovating in the shit space.
Well, not to spoil it, but stay tuned for more Mary Tyler Moore talk yes. in the episode yes. to come. But until then, Allison, where can people get more of you on the internet?
I have a newsletter called Yes, I Was High When I Wrote This, and I I smoke a little weed and write about whatever comes to mind. I don't have any set schedule because I am a stoner. Mm-hmm. And I just do it whenever I feel. But yeah, yes, I was high when I wrote this.
I mean, if you had a schedule for that, I would call shenanigans.
Exactly.
Yes, yeah, seriously.
Exactly. That's not genuine.
No, it's not.
You know?
Well done.
Yeah.
Perfect. Sarah, what have you been watching recently?
I assume that they are 420 drop times. Nice. That's my only note.
I did used to schedule it for 420, but, you know, the higher you get, the less you think about scheduling. Yeah. So.
The less you play by Earth's rules. I completely understand.
I'm on my own time.
Mm-hmm. Bless. There's no segue to this show, which is about professional baseball. So I watched The Clubhouse: A Year with the Boston Red Sox. I had been hearing about the series for a few weeks, particularly the episode in which Red Sox outfielder Jaron Duran gets very real about his mental health struggles. The show is from the same production team that brought us Last Chance U in all its iterations. So naturally, I planned to watch the entire series of The Clubhouse, and I did. And I don't regret it, but it's not quite to the level of the Last Chance franchises. And weirdly, I think it's because it's about baseball, which, given that I'm a huge fan, is a weird thing to say. And it's not like it's not very watchable. It is. Greg Whiteley and his team picked wisely in terms of which players to follow, as well as Fenway Park characters. But it's also a little over-edited around the gameplay. Some of the voiceovers are not identified very clearly. There's a lot of handheld shots and quick montage-y cuts trying to create tension, which just suggests the same attitude that I sometimes get from the commissioner of Major League Baseball, namely that they don't actually like the sport that much and think it's too slow and boring, which, like, whatever, we know. I love the game like a family member, but it's just not as well suited to a docuseries treatment as a shorter season sport like football or hoops is. It is really long. Even individual games can feel like they've been going on for a week. Last night's Mets game is an example. And the fact is that you know how everything turned out for this team last season. So you have to get into some of the personal stories and get a little behind the scenes in order to make up for that natural season tension build. And I'm not crazy about how the Clubhouse decided to parallel the dark nights of the soul for Jaron Duran and for Sox manager Alex Cora, and then not really indict either of them for respectively calling a fan an F-word slur and being embroiled in a sign-stealing scandal that got him suspended. The series just kind of lets the "it was a hard time for me" perspective stand. And I think Duran does feel terrible for using that word. And I don't think Alex Cora is an evil guy. It just seemed like kind of a pulled punch. If you don't want to go there, spend more time with Brian Bello and his journey through the, Brian Bello and his journey through the Dominican recruiting / training pipeline. Because I think that's something American fans don't know a lot about on the granular level. So maybe do that instead of apologizing for somebody who cheated. On the other hand, Cutter Crawford asks how oysters go to the bathroom and, like, asks it a number of times and never gets an answer. And,
wait, why does it come up more than once?
Yeah.
It was in the same scene.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he ever really got an answer that satisfied him. Yeah, Jerry's, that was gold, in my opinion. Give it a look if your team is rained out sometime. It's not crucial, but yeah, The Clubhouse, it's on Netflix. So about Cookie, he's a foster cat. Like I said, I know that 95% of the people within the sound of my voice are like, bitch, that is your cat. Give it up. But I'm not giving up. I would appreciate it if you would check out Instagram.com/bookstorecats. That's the foster coordinator Amanda's page. There might be a cat there that you would like to adopt besides Cookie. But Cookie is also there. Get in touch with her and fill out an application if you're interested. Or you can DM me on our Discord. I can get him to you if you live within a few hours of New York City. I can answer all your questions about him. As you can hear, his lungs are just fine. Adopt, don't shop. Cookie, he needs a home.
All right, before I get into what's happening in the extra hot, great cinematic universe, I just wanted to say briefly, of course, Andor's out, and we've seen 2 weeks worth. I think the third week drops tonight, but not as we record. So yes. I haven't seen that one yet, which is rumored to be the barn burner one. That's supposed to be the good one. Anyways, but I did want to say, just to kind of mention something that I really didn't like about Andor, since, you know, like, I generally absolutely love it. It's my favorite show from the past little bit. But what Andor does usually very well is show you people in Andor universe that are doing things that we also do that you usually don't see in Star Wars, just as part of their storytelling. Like, we're going to go to the space bodega and buy some space spice and some space food to go back home and make space dinner, like that kind of stuff you see. And they usually do it really well. Or I'm going to go to the Northern Italy world and get a Northern Italy coffee and Northern Italy fabric buying spree after. But then there was this one thing, it just did not fit for me at all, which was the Imperial Planet Coruscant fourth hour of the Today Show TV thing they had bugged the hell out of me. It felt wrong. There's something about it that felt like they didn't quite tap into what they were tapping into for the rest of it. So that 6 second long segment bugged me. Mm-hmm. And I will therefore not be watching the rest of Andor.
Yeah, wow. They did that in Battlestar Galactica, too, where it's like there's a certain kind of screenwriter who's like their imagination fails them when it comes to like, how do we do exposition about this or that, where it's like, we don't necessarily need to assume these forms of news still exist in whatever time period.
Especially
this is.
For this season of Andor, which isn't really spoon feeding you every single detail of what happens in their plot on screen, because like, as we all know, if you watch it, each week is a year's jump from the previous week. That's how they're dealing with the fact that everybody is turning 50 on the show. So they are dropping things about, you know, characters they've killed and met and are sad about in between seasons. But yet that really clunky thing in the TV was just like, I don't know. The fact that I'm complaining about this one six second long thing is a testament to how good this show is and how much I'm enjoying it. But
yes,
you know, I love to complain.
Sure.
All right. Well, speaking about Star Wars, our winner of Glowing Briefcase Season 2 has declared that Season 3 will be named Death Star Tramp Stamp Season. I don't know what that means, but that's what it's called. So
okay.
If you don't know what that is.
I do, and I'm scared.
Glowing Briefcase is a in beta daily pop culture trivia site that me and Dan Cassino are running through as paces. If you are listening to this on Patreon, you are definitely already invited. If you go to our Patreon, just search for Briefcase or Glowing Briefcase and you'll find the information there and how to join in. But it's like every weekday, we put some silly quiz for you to fill out and you see how good you did and all that kind of stuff. So it's in beta. We're working out the kinks. We're adding new features. But this season starts next Monday. So next Monday, it'll run for 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great. This Friday, we're going to be talking about the series Forever. It's a Judy Blume adaptation, yes?
It's Judy Blume
Judy
adaptation.
Blume, not the horror author.
No.
She's the, oh my God, I got my period, what's wrong with me author?
Well, Forever, I mean, we'll talk about it, but Forever was the one that had, like, sex scenes in it, so it's possible you've read parts of Forever and not the whole thing. Or maybe I'm just talking about myself.
In that case, the book should be called Sometimes.
Yeah, should. Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in that, you are not a club member, go to extrahotgreat.com/club for information on how to join and snag that full episode. We drop those Fridays. And then come back here on EHG Prime next week. We're going to be talking about Season 2 of Poker Face. And we're welcoming back Mr. David J. Roth for that one. Don't be there, miss it. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week, it's Tara.
Hello. Early in the fourth season of The Mary Tyler Moore Show, which we talked about earlier, Mary's boss, Lou, played by Ed Asner, tells his colleagues he's having a trial separation with his wife, Edie. So it was only a matter of time before he would reach an important milestone for the divorced man dating someone new. This is the premise of Season 5, Episode 4, Lou and That Woman. Here's what I think makes it canon worthy. Number one, it makes Lou vulnerable. Generally, the relationship between Lou and Mary, played by Mary Tyler Moore, an associate producer on the local news show he runs, is about Lou being confident in all aspects of his life and telling Mary how shit is. But the end of Lou's marriage gives Mary a small advantage over him. She has been out in the dating world more than he has and recognizes what it looks like when someone's really putting himself out there. Like Lou is when he waits until everyone else has gone home before coming out of his office in a hunter green velvet jacket over a striped turtleneck that, not to be rude, giving Ernie from Sesame Street. Mary swallows her giggles as he tries to act casual and then clip one.
Notice anything different?
No! No, now that you mention it, yes. Is that a new jacket?
Women always notice.
I didn't at first until you said, you know, did you notice? And then, I took a closer look. And
what do you think? It's velvet.
It's nice.
Nice?
Very nice. Groovy.
Groovy, you don't usually use that kind of word.
You don't usually wear that kind of jacket. You going somewhere special?
Got a date.
So Lou's nervous excitement about his new look is of a piece with his nervous excitement about his new lady, and it's fun to see him in an unfamiliar mode. Number two, it makes Charlene irresistible. Seemingly moments after Mary casually invited Lou to bring his lady by sometime, Lou does, interrupting Mary when she's unclogging her kitchen sink and covered in schmutz and in a sweatshirt with a zipper up the back. Weird detail. Lou introduces Charlene McGuire, played by Sherry North, and here's how that goes, clip two.
Believe it or not, these are my work clothes. I sing and play piano at a bar called the Quarter Note.
Oh, well, Mr. Grant never actually, never actually said. Gee, you know, it's funny, I had a different picture of you all together. I mean, I just figured that you'd be,
younger.
No.
Older.
No, I never pictured Mr. Grant going out with anyone quite so
musical.
Right.
Here you go. First I fixed the drink, then I fixed the sink.
Oh, now, Mr. Grant, don't bother with that. Come on and join us.
No, you two are just getting acquainted. You two are getting acquainted, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, you bet.
Oh, good. I'll just go knock the sludge out of your trap.
Listen, be careful. It's really dirty in there. You don't want to ruin your new turtleneck.
Gee, do you think there's a chance?
I take it you don't like it much either, huh?
Oh, are you kidding? I love it. Tonight was like being out with a 200-pound bumblebee.
The audio format doesn't really capture how cute and shy Lou is and how eager he is for Mary and Charlene to get along, but it's very cute. At work the next day, Mary tells her colleagues how cool Charlene is. Clip three.
Well, to give you an example, she was on the road with a band when she was 16 years old.
Hey.
Yeah. And one of her husbands pitched in both major leagues. You imagine? Oh, she was the only girl on a Marine base in Korea. How about that?
By the way, all of these biographical details feel congruent with the real-life Sherry North, who co-starred with Elvis in The Trouble with Girls and would go on to play Kramer's mother Babs on Seinfeld many years later. But I digress. The very qualities that have so impressed Mary get a completely different reading from Ted, played by Ted Knight, and Murray, played by Gavin McLeod. Clip four.
You old son of a gun. You know, I never pictured you with a band singer.
Well, what's wrong with a band singer?
Nothing. It's great. Look, when I was a bachelor, that was worth two nurses and a stewardess.
Hey, on the road when she was 16, isn't that against some kind of law?
Not if she's legally married to the trombone section.
Hey, Lou, how many husbands has she had?
What's the difference?
Yeah, right. Beyond a certain point, what's the difference? Married to a ball player, huh?
No, okay, Ted.
Well,
okay.
I bet it didn't take Lou long to get to first base.
I bet he never strikes
out with her.
Come on.
I'll bet she's really teaching him about our national pastime.
When Lou starts breaking dates and dodging Charlene's calls, Charlene stops by Mary's to ask what might have happened. Like a recognizable adult from the planet Earth and not a sitcom character, Mary admits that she is probably to blame for repeating Charlene's stories at the office. Charlene, who's much more concerned about how much Mary's eating for breakfast than she is about anything that has happened with Lou, just shrugs that that's life and keeps moving. A different kind of character might ask Mary to help her think of ways to win Lou back or consider changing her image, but Charlene has lived enough life to know who she is and that no guy is worth chasing. Number three, it teaches Lou an important lesson. Mary understands far better than Lou does that women as great as Charlene don't come along every day and tries to make him reconsider his old-fashioned prejudices. Clip five.
I just can't see myself with that sort of woman.
What sort of woman?
I can't discuss the sort of woman she is with the sort of woman you are. That's the sort of woman she is.
Oh, no, wait. This is crazy. Are you telling me that you're breaking up with Charlene because she's known some other men?
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you.
Well, I can't believe that you could be that petty and that narrow-minded and shallow.
Sure I can.
Okay, so there have been some other men.
Not some other men, lots of other men.
Well, what's the cutoff point, Mr. Grant? I mean, is there some number? You know, I'd really like to know. How many men is a woman allowed to have before she becomes that sort of woman?
Six.
Well, if that's your attitude, Mr. Grant, then I just don't think you and I have anything to talk about. I mean, if you're going to break up with a wonderful woman just because of some arbitrary standards, then, you know, boy, I don't want to have anything to do with it. It's your life, Mr. Grant. If you're going to ruin it, then, boy, I wash my hands of the entire matter. Six?
If I had to boil this entire canon pitch down to one exchange, it would be Mary asking what the acceptable number is for a woman and Lou saying six. Almost immediately. The Mary Tyler Moore Show was originally conceived to be about a woman starting over after a divorce, but when TV executives worried A, that divorce in general was still too radioactive a topic to touch, and B, that fans would think Mary had been divorced from Rob Petrie, whose wife Laura she had played on the Dick Van Dyke Show, the Mary Tyler Moore Show was reimagined as the story of a woman moving on from a broken engagement. And so even though Mary is a single woman in her 30s who dates a variety of dudes over the years, some seriously, the show is a little coy about how much to show her possibly going all the way with any of them. And her reaction to six may be the most explicit suggestion that her number is probably higher than that. For her to say that in so many words would change her relationship with Lou forever. But the genius of the show's writing is that the meaning of the scene is perfectly clear as it is. And it even seems perfectly clear to Lou, who goes to see Charlene at work and, poorly, tries to apologize. Clip six.
You've led a lot more active life than anyone I've ever known. And it was throwing me. But that's all over now. I don't care about your past. I don't care how many guys you've been with. Four. Five. We've got to look at today, the present. Clean slate, fresh start, next case, what's new? I said this was personal.
So in other words, what you're trying to say is, you forgive me.
Yeah, that's it. I forgive you.
Lou, huh? Go home.
After a barfly requests that Charlene play You Made Me Love You, Lou gets rid of everyone by ordering a round of drinks and tries again with Charlene, more successfully this time. Clip seven.
It's not your past that's bothering me. It's my past. I haven't even got one. I guess I was trying to tell myself that you weren't good enough for me. The truth is, I was afraid that I wasn't going to be good enough for you.
Good enough? Lou, I have a feeling you're going to be the best thing that ever happened to me.
Really?
Really?
I was not alive when this episode aired, barely, but I feel confident guessing they didn't have the term slut-shaming then. However, the show's producers obviously knew what it was, even if it didn't have a name, and used this episode to show how it damages both perpetrators and victims, and then gave us a happy ending. What more can you ask? Oh, just one fourth thing, which is Betty White slays. Yes, I said it! I have talked a lot of shit about Betty White as a geriatric punchline in the waning years of her life, but I'm going on the record on the main show after saying it in a Patreon bonus that she is fantastic as Sue Ann Nivens. Considering her own lusty pursuit of Lou, it's a little surprising she only stops into this episode for two scenes that has nothing to do with his dating life. Mary's redecorating the office, and Sue Ann, who hosts WJM's homemaking show, has concerns. Clip 8.
Well, I'm sorry, Sue Ann, but you'll have to admit that the curtains that were there before were pretty bad.
Now, Mary, I'm sure you weren't aware when you said that I designed the curtains that were there before. So I'm just going to pretend you didn't say that. I think that's part of being adult, learning to overlook the all-too-human errors that each of us is prone to. That's why I'm not going to say one word about that cruddy wallpaper in the men's room.
Did you crash the men's room?
Of course not. I went as somebody's guest.
She also wears an excellent shirt dress and a print of little locks all over it. No notes on Sue Ann in this episode. She rules. Lou and That Woman features the introduction of a delightful recurring character, Lou dressed like a Muppet, impeccable sexual politics, and a piano bar sing-along. That's really everything that anyone could ask, like I said. I hope you will agree and make me love you by voting it into the canon. And in the course of doing so, we can also discuss whether Ronnie, the lounge singer played on Frasier by Wendy Malick, who ends up marrying Marty, is an homage to Charlene, which is something I didn't think until I watched this episode this time.
All right. Thank you, Tara. Before we give it to Allison to start us off, I want to have the Seed Right Club question posed to you, Tara.
Yeah.
You are one of the people at the piano bar during the start of the conversation, which looks like it's going to become an argument. Do you leave for free drinks or food or whatever is on offer, or do you find a way to stay within earshot?
Yeah, I get as close as I can to eavesdrop without being very noticeable,
right.
For sure.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're the person that Lou Grant has to say, I said it
yes,
was personal the third time. You're the third one.
Yep.
Okay. All right, Allison, you get first crack at Tara's presentation and the episode itself. What are you thinking?
It's absolutely canon. You're right, Tara. Listen, I love this episode because it's one of the times where you get to see Lou Grant vulnerable. But I also love that, like, when the misogyny comes out in this show, they manage to round it, like, they bring it back around to how it's rooted in the man's insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
They say it very plainly. That whole monologue Lou had about, you know, I haven't had much of a past, and it's good. I'm glad that they were smart enough and brave enough back then to do that on a show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do love that six is the established number. That is one of my favorite parts of that episode.
Mm-hmm.
How quick he fires back that it's six. And you can see it on Mary's face where she's like, whoa. You know, there are a few times throughout the show, like when her parents come to visit and the topic comes up about her not being abstinent or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. But I do like that they coyly put that in there. Like, you know, she's not just some Pollyanna
mm-hmm.
the way that she seems on the show.
Yeah.
And I do love the character depth of, Lou being smitten and dressing like a dork to impress a woman and wanting Mary's approval mm-hmm. of this woman. And then, you know, there was a little misogyny in there for everyone. You
mm-hmm.
know, everybody kind of got a crack at it. You know, Charlene having an issue with Mary eating breakfast. It is it's the most important meal of the day. She can have eggs and bacon and toast. There's nothing wrong with it, Charlene.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
let a woman let her have a corn muffin. Let her live.
Yeah, she can't have any fun. Come on. A little cereal.
I like that idea, too, that she buys the variety pack. Like, she doesn't just want to commit to one. She's like, that sort of speaks mm-hmm. to the whole six question, too, that she's she's trying different cereals on a day-to-day basis.
What's the optimal number of cereal boxes in a cereal variety pack?
I think eight.
No, it's six.
I was going to say eight also, yeah.
Okay.
You know.
six, actually.
All right. Oh.
Well, what does that say?
I
get it.
Water on cereal instead of milk, so don't listen to anything I say about anything.
Yeah, we can't go down the water and cereal road again,
Sarah. We don't have the time.
Well, you know,
I'm not going down the road. I'm just telling you it exists on the map.
I'm willing to hear you out. Do you have any kind of limitations about what cereal you'll put water over?
Oh, no.
Do you do it because you don't have milk?
I do it because I hate milk.
Okay, you prefer water in your cereal. We're going to get so many letters about this.
Yeah, I mean, dry cereal is fine, but there are certain cereals that, like, they need moistening.
I mean, yeah, sometimes you need that wet. I get it.
Mm-hmm. We've spent so much time preparing to talk about television, and I know when this gets on Blue Sky and the Discord, people just can be talking about your weird cereal habits now. Mm-hmm. We've lost the thread.
Okay, you can cut this.
Nope.
That's within your power to do. Okay. I won't be taking questions at this time or any other. I feel like I answered them.
Anything else, Allison, or should we pass it on to old Milky?
Let's pass it on. Yeah.
You got it, soggy bran flakes.
Soggy branting. Yeah, this was delightful. Perfect casting of Sherry North. She has absolutely the right sort of like raspy, weary delivery for this. And when she's like, you ever heard of Jimmy Dorsey? Well, no one in this band had. Like these little like, I don't know, like anyone here from Jersey bits that she does like just reflexively, but without like the writing does that in the show all the time, that it's just like, this is who this character is all the time. But it's not sort of like underlining the differences between a guest character and like the cast members or anything like that. Sue Ann, obviously flawless, except for busting on mid-century modern, but it was the 70s. People didn't know any better. The outfit, which was like just ridiculous enough, but they don't linger on, and they linger on it just enough and have him do just awkward enough, like lean, so that someone will notice his Ernie turtleneck and velvet jacket. But it's never too much. Murray and Ted being misogynist jackholes about Charlene. But it's only like a couple of lines. And then Ted is like leaving the room while he's sort of finishing up his bits about how she's a big road hoe. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just perfectly balanced in every way. And it's always so surprising that a show that's half a century old that you wouldn't think would have this light a touch about stuff that was like, I don't know, but like sitcoms even were getting pretty heavy into messagey ideas like this on like Maude or Good Times or whatever, that this just understands, like it gets to the heart of it and isn't too, you know, there's not like lights hanging on every line. And I absolutely agree that the heart of the pitch is that exchange where she's going in and out of Mr. Grant's office. And then that her final comment is like six. That, I mean, the calculus of how many times she goes in and out and when she says what is like, I mean, it's this wonderful alchemy that you're like, this is such a professional show that really also understands and hears its characters for who they are and for how funny, just like, I don't know, life is, even when someone's being an insecure dick, which Mr. Grant kind of is. I will also add that the fact that Mary could not be drunk enough or high enough or thrown off enough to ever not call him Mr. Grant. Like, even when she's like, she's got schmutzig all over the sweatshirt and here's this glamorous lady friend, and still it's Mr. Grant. Even if he's not in the room, she calls him that. And it's that ear for detail that makes me love this show. Her outfits are deranged, but in the best Ford presidency way, just like so much screaming plaid. I love
the
it.
The style on that show and the way that they pattern clash and everything is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like,
it's so good.
It's really remarkable. Even just like the decor, whenever it is that you get to see Ted's apartment, there's one shot. He's got like 13 pillows on his couch. And it's like, you know, of course he does, you know, but, and, you know, a framed picture of himself in the living room. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Those little touches mean the world to me.
Yeah. And Mary rewears outfits, too. Like, she has a few favorite dresses that you see more than once. Yeah. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. This was a delight. It's fun to watch. But then what parts is Tara going to tease out? So that was like fun to sort of hear that as well. So great episode and presentation.
Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, what I was saying earlier, how thinking about a show that is this old, and when you get such a modern feeling character like Charlene, you're like, oh, how ahead of its time Mary Tyler Moore Show actually was. This is an episode that really highlights that. I also like that Lou Grant, when we first meet him, we sort of get this one note for a couple episodes that he is this guy at the office. He's tough as nails. He doesn't take any shit. He's gruff. You know, he just like is this ornery beast. But then we find out the full character impression is that, yes, he's that, but he's also a mess otherwise. Like, he doesn't really have his life together domestically. He gets divorced halfway through the series. So I like the fact that the character is consistent throughout the series, and the fact that we get to this point in season five where he's sort of like starts the episode giddy, you know, he's got the turtleneck out and he's like trying to, you know, show off for Mary that he is allowing himself to be dressed, I guess. Or wait, no, he's not. He's
no,
not.
he's wearing what he thinks she'll think.
That's
is
right.
Cool.
Yeah, he's wearing what he thinks is stylish and is going to impress Charlene. But it doesn't feel like a character assassination. Like, if this was Parks and Rec, like the journey Ron Swanson takes from sort of the same start to like an ending that feels like it's a different character than we started off from. I do appreciate that a lot about the Lou Grant character. And I feel like this episode is emblematic of how to make that work. You know, like he is this way at work. He has this belief system. You know, he might be a workaholic. He just might, you know, be bad with people, and he just doesn't want to talk to anybody as any more than he needs to. And God bless him. But he's also like kind of a fuck up, you know, outside of that environment. And that tracks with this episode.
You get to learn more about the characters without anything being walked back.
Yes.
Like, they're not taking anything away. They're like, yeah, he is like this, but he's also like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really nice.
The opening of the episode is Mary in the office. We discovered that she is going to decorate the office. She's going through like swatches for, I don't know exactly what that is, but the one she has is this, I don't know what you call it, but regular red glass, you know, like wavy, you know, and we had that glass in our old kitchen, our very late 60s, early 70s kitchen back home. So that took me back. Apparently it's called Calypso glass. Yeah. Or at least it was on the swatch. But I'm trying to figure out what in the office could be red glass. Where would you even put that? One hell of a bathroom. Lou drops some truth bombs here. He doesn't have the right ears for a turtleneck. And yep, he's right. He didn't.
He says he looks like a turtle. He did.
Yeah. Drop by anytime means never, according to Lou. And yes, he's right there, too. If you say, yeah, drop by anytime, what you're really saying is, don't drop by any time. We need to make an appointment.
Call first. Yep.
And then the only thing that nobody else mentioned is not really a, you know, big knock on it, but I was surprised that when Mary and Charlene are having the start of their conversation, when it's the next day, not the one with Lou, but one where they're
the one
by
over
themselves,
breakfast. Yeah.
She's in the kitchen starting her breakfast or assembling the breakfast, and the kitchen is not mic'd. It's very tinny and roomy and distant until, and she says a sentence in transition over the threshold from the kitchen to the living room, and you could tell exactly where the boom mic is, because as soon as she goes over that wall, it becomes crystal clear and her voice changes.
I kind of like that. That had like
it
a verite.
It was charming in its way, but also like it just weird. This is one of those things I don't think would happen today, but
would never have happened post like Cheers probably. Yeah. So
no, I love this episode just because of how modern it is. You are tempted to forget about that because the things that, you know, the highlights for this TV show is usually the really good character work they do. But then sometimes you forget, but like they really set it properly. Like everything works perfectly here.
Yep. So,
all right, let's put this to the official vote. Allison, what say you, canon worthy or not?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Sarah, what do you say?
I think this is groovy. So yes, for me as well.
All right. Me too. So.
Yay.
That means that the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Season 5, Episode 4, Lou and That Woman, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover who is the winner and the loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It's Apple TV Plus' heist series, 12-12-12. It is adding Callie Rice from the most recent season of True Detective. She is my favorite thing about that season. I would like to watch everything that Callie Rice is in, and so that is good news for that series. Also, it's how I finally heard of it. Like, there's other big name cast in it, but something about
Apple TV Plus heist series. I was just like, the eye just bounces off of it. It's like Kinnaman proofing. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
What's the title mean? Do you know?
Mm-mm.
No. Sounds like a donut order for a party. 12 crullers, 12 old fashions, 12 honey dips, please. All right, Tara, mm-hmm. who is our loser of the week?
Our loser is Disney, which is not getting Jeremy Renner back for season 2 of Hawkeye because they offered him half his salary. And regardless, go ahead.
What does this mean for the future of renovations?
I mean, it's probably not good. What does this mean for the Jeremy Renner app is the more important question. Yeah. Whether God. I think Jeremy Renner is worth any amount of money is beside the point. Like, he's part of the MCU. And, like, Disney is... Stories like this only make it look worse as one of the, like, remaining, what is it, like, 4 media companies that exist. Like, they are so cheap. This is only one example.
Yeah. And if you want to cancel it, just cancel
just
it.
Just cancel
put it.
Put
it on him to be like... I'm going to cheat on you and force a breakup. Like, just
again, right.
Just cancel it.
Or do the thing where it's like, oh, he's around the corner. He'll be here any minute. And then he comes back for season 3 because they finally found some money in a couch. Like, this is it's dumb.
Uh-huh. Hawkeye Snow. Yeah.
Hawkeye's out turning this bus into a fortress right. of aerotude.
Yes.
He's got a little side ponytail when he's talking on the phone.
Speaking of side ponytails, not really. Do you know what time it is?
Is it non-regulation game time?
Non-regulation game time!
It is!
We are between seasons, so we're doing non-regulation game time. That's how this goes. So in honor of our lead topic, the 4 seasons, this is a very time-sensitive game. I am trying to get you to identify a TV character, person, or show that contains a day of the week, a month of the year, or a season. In some cases, the name of a month or season may be part of a longer word. Both autumn and fall are potentially in the mix. If you can get the answer I'm looking for from the first clue, it's worth 2 points. You can guess for free, Sarah. And if you get it
Thank
wrong,
you.
I'll give you a little more information, and then it's worth 1 point. For example... This person played Anne, in Arrested Development.
Mae Whitman.
Mae Whitman is correct. You are all playing for a prize from me. The victor will receive a vintage wall calendar from a year where the dates all line up exactly with 2026. So could be a McGraw-Edison World Adventure calendar from 1981. Could be a Zildjian Symbols calendar from 1998. Could be a United Transportation Union calendar from 1970. That one has a CN train on it, Dave.
Mm,
Play
choo
hard.
Choo.
Could be yours. All of these are real and really on eBay right now. Yeah. Legit examples. So let's go to Mickey to see who is going first.
We will start with Sarah.
We're going to go Sarah, Dave, Allison. We've got 21 questions and a tiebreaker. Are you ready to play? Let me check my calendar.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
All right. We're starting with Sarah. This TV movie franchise brings together a Melrose Place star, a different Melrose Place star, and some ducks.
Oh, is it The Wedding March?
It is The Wedding March for 2 points.
Woo!
Hallmark TV movie series. Would you believe there were 6 of them starring Jack Wagner and Josie Bassett?
Do they get married each time? Do they like fall in love
yes.
and then they get divorced so they can come back for the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds?
It's set at a wedding venue, so they don't get married until the very end.
Nice.
Spoiler of the series. All right, Dave.
Yeah.
When this woman isn't busy being married to Paul Scheer, she has a recurring role as a gynecologist on New Girl.
Oh, boy. There's a bunch of names, and I don't know what order they're supposed to go in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm writing it down to see which one looks most correct if it was a credit.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us what the names are before you decide on the order?
Well, one of them's Diane.
Mm-hmm.
One of them's June.
Mm-hmm.
One of them's Raphael.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm gonna go with, because the nature of the game, I'm going to guess June, Diane, Raphael.
Correct.
Ooh,
it's pronounced
nice.
Raphael.
Okay.
The last member of the How Did This Get Made podcast team that I have not interviewed yet. All right, Allison.
Yes.
This sketch show has been a network mainstay for much longer than you have been alive.
That could be anything. Oh, Saturday Night Live.
Correct. Good for
two
points.
I was going to do it in my Don Pardo voice.
All right, back to Sarah D. Bunting. This woman continued playing the New Jersey mother that's probably still her best known role even after she died.
Oh, God. Just take the knife out of the ham. Nancy Marchand?
That's correct. Good for 2 points for The Sopranos. Dave.
Yes.
This horror series is a Poe substitute for reading the original source material.
Oh, The Fall of the House of Usher.
Correct. Good job.
I was like,
gorgeous.
The following, the autumn-a-going.
Kind of works, but
that's where, the fall-owing. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No.
But no, you got it. Allison, this jumpsuited reporter spent most of her time with four heroes on a half shell.
I mean, if anybody was going to get this sight unseen in this panel, it should be you. You're the closest to the bullseye age-wise on this.
That's
one.
True, but you can ask for a hint. There's another hint if you want it.
Can I have a hint, please?
Yes, she shares a name with the month that just passed.
I don't.
Da, 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 da.
I don't.
Turtle power.
What is it, Dave?
Oh, shit. What's the last name? It's April O'Neil?
Correct.
Yes.
April O'Neil.
Wow.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The reporter.
Yes.
In the yellow jumpsuit.
I've never, you know.
Okay.
Little too much Mary Tyler Moore.
Not enough trash.
Yeah. Not enough Saturday morning shit.
Okay, Sarah.
Yeah.
A video game inspired this bunker-based post-apocalyptic comedy.
Bunker-based is fun to say.
Bunker-based post-apocalyptic comedy. I need a hint.
Part of its title is inspired by the leaf peeping season.
Did you say leaf peeping?
Leaf peeping, yeah.
Fall at the House of the Walking Dead.
I can't believe I know this one.
Fallout?
Fallout is good for 1 point. Dave.
Leaf peeping. Okay, yeah.
I can't believe this is the first time you're doing
you know
that
me.
Phrase.
I don't go on the same internet as the rest of you.
That's true.
I'm on the dark web hiring hitmen.
You go on a hayride, put water on cereal. It's a good time. You'll
Dave,
love it.
Dave.
Yeah.
This period comedy revolves around a major catastrophe in the history of finance.
Oh, this is Black Monday?
It is Black Monday. Your hint would have been, I know Garfield hates part of this title. Back to Allison, then we'll do a score break. Allison. Among this guy's million jobs is hosting Password with Keke Palmer.
You know, I knew the Black Monday one and I knew Fallout. Can I get a hint? Something.
Sure. Part of his name is both a season and a thing he infamously did on camera while drunk, allegedly.
Huh. Feels like that clue is something to click, but I don't get it.
I don't know. Mm.
Sarah, what is it?
Jimmy Fallon?
Jimmy Fallon. Yes. Jimmy Fallon.
Well,
my favorite. He loved his hand from his ring. It was horrifying. It was a really bad fall.
Oh.
Yeah. Yikes.
It was years ago. All right. Let's get those scores. We're roughly halfway through the game.
All right. Allison has 2 points. I have 5 points. And David T. Cole is our leader with 6 points.
Dave's gunning for that wall calendar. Here we go.
I love calendars. I love the passage of time.
Back to Sarah. This is one of several guys General Hospital propelled to pop music stardom.
One of several guys. WAG is not a season, so I'm going to go with Rick Springfield.
Rick Springfield is correct.
What about February Jones?
Don't tip off future possible clues. Okay. Dave.
Yeah.
This show about a stunt performer recently inspired a very average movie.
Ooh, shots fired. You're not wrong.
I know.
This is the Fall Guy.
That's correct. Allison. Before this guy's name was synonymous with trashy talk shows, he was the mayor of Cincinnati.
Jerry Springer.
Jerry Springer is good for 2 points. Sarah D. Bunting. This TV movie found in 90210 star ignoring advice about a controlling boyfriend to her peril.
Can I hear the clue again, please?
Sure. This TV movie found a 90210 star ignoring advice about a controlling boyfriend to her peril.
I know what it is, but I couldn't tell you the order of the words.
Yeah.
Rayfield, Diane.
I know this much as Diane, June, yeah. Raphael. Could I have a hint, please?
The title includes this current month.
Oh, Mother, May I Sleep with Danger?
Mother, May I Sleep with Danger is good for 1 point. Dave.
I was like, help, it's May, Mother. I was like, I knew it was something like that.
No. Dave.
Yeah.
This show revolved more about bank loans than you typically expect from a superhero drama.
More about bank loans. Revolves more around bank loans than your typical superhero drama.
Yes.
That is not ringing any bells.
You can't ask for another hint.
Yeah. I got a perfect score so far, and I want to keep it, but this one is... All right. So it can be a day, a month, or a season?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to throw this out there as a guess.
Okay.
Legends of Tomorrow?
No. Oh. Interesting.
Well, you know, that seems the kind of show that would have some weird bullshit about bank loans. It would be goofy and weird.
Well, I think you watched more of this than I did, but here's your official clue. Maybe it was cold of me to stop watching the season as quickly as I did.
Oh, fuck. This is Peanut Butter, Millennium Falcon, Winter Soldier, and the Snowman.
Which is actually called?
I don't know which one it is.
Winter Soldier of Dave's Discontent.
Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
Yes.
Okay.
Good job. Yay! Good for one. Allison, this icy blonde never got enough credit for what she brought to Mad Men.
What is her name? January Jones.
Good for 2 points.
Boom.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Mm-hmm.
This actor played an ADA who had one of the sneakier exits from Law & Order SVU.
An ADA? Oh, God. It's Mrs. Bobby Flay. Stephanie March?
Stephanie March is good for 2 points. Dave.
Yeah.
This intern-turned-assistant brought a dark energy to an otherwise sunny government office.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
Say that again?
This intern-turned-assistant brought a dark energy to an otherwise sunny government office.
April Ludgate?
April Ludgate is correct. Allison has... We'll ask Allison, and then we'll do one more score break before your last questions. Allison, this high school sports drama ended up far surpassing the movie it was adapted from. More shots fired.
Not really.
High school. Oh. Friday Night Lights.
Good for 2. You each have 1 question left. Let's hear them scores.
Them scores are as follows. Pretty close. Allison has 8. I have 10. David T. Cole still in the lead with 11.
Oh, boy. Here's your last question, Sarah. We all traveled to Northern Ireland for this serial killer drama.
Did we?
Thought you did. Maybe you didn't.
I know this one. Pretty sure you did. I know this one, so Sarah should know this one by genre transference.
The serial killer drama. I actually need a hint.
Shares a name with the season that has come up by far the most in this game.
Oh, it's that thing. Is it The Fall?
It is The Fall. Jillian Anderson.
All right, I'll take it.
Dave.
Yes.
This comic was the first Canadian to compete on Taskmaster and win.
Yeah. What's her name? Their name?
Their name.
May. Martin?
Yes! Yeah. Wow. Good job.
Wow. Nice pull.
And finally for Allison, this show about a braided goth teen is the latest entry in a franchise that is shockingly robust for having originated as a series of cartoons in The New Yorker.
Christ, what an asshole.
Can you repeat it?
Yes. This show about a braided goth teen is the latest entry in a surprisingly robust franchise. New Yorker cartoons
braided
are
braided goth teen.
was about to do it too.
Oh, Wednesday?
Wednesday for two. And that's the end of regulation play. How did the scores shake out?
Oh, boy. It was very close. But Allison finished with 10, I finished with 11, and birthday boy DTC finished with lucky 13.
Happy birthday, Dave.
Thanks.
Happy birthday.
I'm old today. Older than ever.
I could act like I let him win, but I didn't. I just, you know, lost. Like usual.
I'm the right age to answer questions about the Mary Tyler Moore Show and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's true. You are. I do have a tiebreaker. We can play it for a steel meal.
All right.
Dave, you can assign it to whoever you wish.
I see. Yes. Okay. First person to shout out the answer wins. Everybody's in on it.
That's right.
Got it.
Okay. Here we go.
All right.
This 50s TV mom is famous for doing household chores in heels and pearls.
June Cleaver.
Yes. Dave got it.
Yes.
It was supposed to be like June Allison. Then I was like, oh no, that was a different product.
Dave, where are you assigning your steel meal?
What is the current steel meal situation, please?
Sarah has 3. I have 4. Valued guests have 0.
I choose to take 1 away from you.
Oh, okay.
I'm just reducing the number of hints for my own evil purposes.
Fair enough.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We checked out the 4 Seasons TV remake before going around the dial with stops at Taskmaster, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, The Clubhouse, and Andor. Speaking of The Mary Tyler Moore Show, Tara made the successful case for Lou and That Woman's induction into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and I, David T. Cole, master of game time, was the winner in this week's non-regulation game time from Tara. Next up is the Judy Blume adaptation Sometimes, aka Forever, on Extra, Extra Hot Great. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
a 200-pound bumblebee,
Sarah D. Bunting,
Stop Killing Steve Carell Characters Challenge,
and Allison Lewis.
Steve Carell can't stop dying.
He can't.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra. Not great.
That's not Rose. Roses are red.
Violets are blue.
That paint is all wet, Ted.
And so are you.
Okay, yeah, he cannot stop dying. He can't stop dying.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.